Thank you, everyone, for listening to Remake Rewind, the podcast where we decide if remakes or reboots should have happened. This is episode 9. With me, as always, is Dustin. How are you doing, Dustin?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much.
And we've got a special guest with us tonight. She is my co-host for our other podcast, Ruin My Childhood. With me is Kat, a.k.a. Katrina Ossity. How are you doing, Kat?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for jumping in on this episode.
Thanks for having me.
Unfortunately, Xavier is not going to be able to make it this episode. He had just a kind of a family emergency, and last minute he wasn't able to record. So he'll be back for next week, episode 10, and that's going to be a huge episode. We're actually going to have guests from another podcast. We'll let you know a little bit more about that next week, but episode 10 is going to be a big episode, so Xavier will definitely be here for that. And without, you know, any more delays, we're just going to talk about our movies. The movies we did this week, this is a first for us, but we're going to do it several more times in the future, I'm sure. This is the first time we did a foreign movie and the American remake. We actually did Le Dîner de Cons, which I cannot say with a
wow.
Very French accent.
You don't pronounce the S. Le Dîner de Cons.
That's it. It's also...
You should get familiar with that word, though.
And then, of course, that movie is also called The Dinner Game. So if you guys want to look for that movie after listening to this podcast, it's in many English-speaking countries. It's called simply called The Dinner Game. And then the American remake is Dinner for Schmucks.
They should have called it Movie for Schmucks.
Yeah, they should have. The movie is interesting. I have kind of an ambivalent just history with the movie. We'll get into it.
Well, did it like do something to your parents? Or what happened? What do you mean?
When this movie came out,
did it
I
do something to you when you were a child? It's not your fault, dude.
Show us where it touched you on the doll.
All right, I think I just need to get this off my chest. I think we just need to talk about it.
Yeah, I think
the trauma will be in the past. So when this movie came out, I remember seeing trailers for it, and I thought it looked just horrendously bad. I had no desire to see it. But
uh-huh.
Katrina and I ended up buying this movie because this is going to show how old we are. We were at Hollywood Video. What Hollywood Video would do is after a movie was no longer popular, they would start selling off the DVDs, and they would do sometimes deals like 5 for $20. Well, they might be $10 each, but when you buy 5 of them, you got it for like super cheap. So we had 4 movies that we really wanted, and we just picked a 5th movie, and this was it. So basically, picking this shitty movie made it where all the other movies were like 75% off. So we got it, and we watched it, and I ended up really liking it. And then I watched it a second or a third time down the line, and I didn't like it. But then I watched it a 4th time somewhere, and I liked it. And this time I did not like it. So it's just an up and
down
rollercoaster.
You got an on-again, off-again relationship with this movie, dude. Like,
absolutely.
It's just going to follow you around your whole life. You got to just let it go.
You just need to
don't ever watch
it
again.
It forever.
Just don't ever watch it again. You watch it a little, you're going to watch like a little bit of it, and it's going to creep
back
into your life.
Back in.
It's never going to leave you alone.
Oh, man. Kind of like the girlfriend in the movie.
Yeah. I have a similar relationship with that movie as well, so I totally understand that.
Well, yeah, we were living together, and every time I've watched it, you've been there. It's been kind of
that's horrible.
I've only watched it twice, though. Why have you watched it so many times?
No, we've watched it.
Are you secretly watching this movie like all the time? Is that what's
I
happening?
I think he is. I have only watched this movie twice.
Do you have a secret relationship twice, with honey. This movie?
So anyway, let's stop talking about my infatuation with this movie and talk about the criteria on which we will judge these movies. What do you guys think we should be talking about?
Let's see. I think the plot, for one, varies quite a bit between the two. The lead character and the character of the idiot.
Yeah, I definitely think we need to talk about the differences between the two sets of leads. What about you, Dustin? Anything else you think we should be talking about?
No, I'm fine with that. I think that'll work.
I think we should also just kind of touch upon the grossly different styles of humor. And I think that's going to pretty much go hand in hand with the two leads, because the two idiots are drastically different. The two quote unquote normal guys, like the two protagonists of the story, they're different characters, but they're so different that they're farce. Like,
well,
one's...
I don't know. I felt like they were pretty different. Like, I felt like Paul Rudd's character was like kind of begrudgingly doing the idiot thing. And this dude was like all about it.
Well, what I mean by that drastically different is they're normal people. Like they're
they're not
farce characters.
Yeah, like, I think also
one's an asshole, but one, I mean, I think the other's not.
One of the problems I had kind of with both of these movies is how they just made it like people with like kind of eccentric hobbies are idiots, and I don't agree with that at all.
No. No, not
like
at
they
all.
Both very like shittily defined what an idiot is, and I kind of had a problem with that.
I agree. So let's just dive into the original one. I'm just going to call it the Dinner Game because I cannot do the accent.
Oh yes, you can.
Try again.
Le Dinner de Con.
Nope.
I thought it was closer.
It was kind of more Spanish.
Right? I mean, so, if you could do Spanish someday, that would be great.
I can speak Spanish. ¿Dónde está la biblioteca?
That got what? Italian at the end. What happened there?
Oh, all right. Wow. So this is why everywhere we go in Puerto Rico, people just automatically speak to us in English.
I'm fine with that.
They can smell it on you.
All right. So let's talk about the movie. So just... Rough. The story is pretty simple, but this is the plot in a nutshell. Pierre, what was his last name? I don't remember his last name.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Hang on.
Oh, yes, you do.
It's like Bonchant or something. Pignon. Like that. No, Pignon was the other guy.
Oh, Brochon. Brochon.
Brochon.
Say it. What was it?
Pierre Bonchant.
No. Brochon. Yeah, I mean. Brochon.
All right. So anyway.
I think it's Brochon.
Yeah.
Pierre.
It is.
At the beginning of the movie is hanging out with a friend, and he was like, I don't have an idiot for, you know, this week's dinner. And then the guy he was talking to goes on a train, and he meets Francois Pignon.
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 Pignon. Pignon.
Pignon.
Stop it. All right. So he meets Francois, who builds the really amazing buildings out of matchsticks, and this guy's instantly like, oh, I'm gonna call my friend. So as soon as they get off
the guy's instantly like, this train, guy's a fucking idiot.
Yeah, so he calls the friend and is like, hey, listen, this guy's an idiot.
This guy I'm that makes amazing models out of matchsticks is a fucking idiot.
So
well,
and he's,
no,
I mean, he's
I
a
think
little
like,
socio-
I
like
think
socially
his first
awkward.
Impression of him is that he is super socially awkward. Like, you
I
know, when
he was super,
a
like,
7-year-old
articulate.
Really wants you to see their POG collection, and so they just kind of like casually drop it in front of you. I mean, he does the same thing with a photo of his Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, I don't know. I liked when he was like, guess how many matches it took to make this? guess, wrong.
300?
Idiot.
382,000. Like,
who's the idiot now?
So anyway, Pierre calls Francois and tells him that he's really interested in making a book out of his buildings, so he wants him to come to dinner. Meanwhile, he like hurts his back, and his wife is basically... I don't remember what actually started the fight, but he gets in a fight with his wife, and she says he's kind of a dick for doing this dinner thing. She leaves. Pinot comes, and just a bunch
Pignon.
Of romantics.
Pignon.
God damn it. Francois comes, and all these like just crazy things happen. And ultimately, he's trying to get his wife back, and he hurts his back, and then he decides... They're never able to actually go to the dinner. And the movie ends with... It kind of ends ambivalently. Like, you don't really know if he's going to get his wife back. You don't really know if he's going to stay friends with this guy or take him to a drink. Because by the end of it, Francois knows that he's the idiot and he's kind of upset, but he ends up still trying to help Pierre get his wife back, but kind of blows it at the end.
Yeah.
So that's it in a nutshell. I'm sure we'll bring up some of the finer points when we start talking about the characters, but that's the plot in a nutshell. So I guess we should talk about the characters. What do you guys want to say, because since I've been talking a lot with the summary.
Well, I was actually reading about it, and I guess the actor Jacques Villeray played the Pignon character in it was a play, and he has done that performance 600 times.
That's insane.
Damn.
So he's pretty good at it.
Right.
Yeah, I'd say he's probably a master at it.
Yeah, I thought he was great. Very charming. I liked his genuine enthusiasm for his project. It was kind of infectious, you know, like he was a total dummy when it came to like everything else, but like he was into that. And also, like, I don't know, man. I would definitely thumb through a book of photographs of matchstick monuments if it was, like, at the dentist or something.
Yeah,
like,
I was going to say, like, you're at the dentist or the doctor's and you see that. Like, I would look through it. It'd be pretty interesting. Like,
I think I have actually looked through the entirety of one of those books.
Yeah, like, it's a fine hobby.
And it's charming.
Yeah, you know, it's not like he's like, oh, check out my skull collection. Like, you know, he's got matchstick hobby. Cool.
Miniature things are cool.
Yeah.
Well, and it's something that taking something from that you would find around the house anywhere and turning it into something you wouldn't expect. It's interesting. And the stuff was really cool. And what was interesting was it showed, like, here's my first one. It's just a bridge. It's 300 matchsticks. And then it goes to, like, the Eiffel Tower, which is 300 and something thousand. He truly mastered it. It wasn't just something he did. Like, I thought it was really impressive. And I don't really think he was an idiot. Like, he was definitely socially awkward and lonely because his wife left him. But he was functioning as a tax, you know, whatever he was doing. He wasn't an auditor, but he worked for the French equivalent of the IRS.
He was very secure in who he was.
Yeah, he was very comfortable, and he didn't care what others really thought of him. Even after he found out that he was going to go to this dinner where people were just going to make fun of him, he was just like, this is who I am, and he was completely cool with it. And he kind of guilted Pierre a little bit. Like, Pierre is kind of an asshole. And by kind of,
totally.
I mean,
he's a total asshole.
But yeah, there was something endearing and likable. Like, I was never annoyed with Francois. In fact, I liked him, and I felt bad for him the entire movie.
Well, and you start to feel bad for him right at the beginning because he is invited under the guise of, oh, there's this person in publishing I want to introduce you to. And it's his chance for the world to see his passion, which is, you know, these creations.
He actually has something to lose by this.
Exactly. Well, I mean, he has something to lose.
He has a lot to gain, you know.
Yeah.
That's way different. Like, in the other one, they're just like, oh, I hit this idiot with my car. You'd be perfect. I'll bring you to dinner, idiot. And this one is like,
no, you're right.
Way more
cruel. I didn't even think about that. Like, this is something, this could have been a life-changing opportunity. He thought it was a life-changing opportunity for him. Like, it's almost the equivalent of, like, some girl in Hollywood stumbles across a movie producer and he's like, I'm going to put you in my next movie. Like, kind of thing. Like,
#blessed moment.
And yeah, and then it was taken away from him. Like, as soon as he found out what it is he basically lost his book deal. Like,
well, and you kind of see it in his face. Like, every time he realizes that he's done something wrong or he's messed up, like, he's never done anything other than be socially awkward and be excited about what he was doing. And that excitement would make him forget what he was supposed to say on the phone, you know, when he's supposed to call the guy that his wife is supposedly visiting. You know, it's these little slip ups, but you see it in his face that, you know, he recognizes that he's done something wrong. And so then he starts scheming to make it up to him
and he always wants to do the right thing and help people.
Yeah.
And to the point where he, like, calls his friend at the IRS to help him find an address, and he makes that guy dinner and everything like that. And, like, he's doing everything it can. In fact, he actually gets one of Pierre's, like, long lost best friends back into his life.
Right, like, inadvertently, basically, by screwing up.
Yeah. And he's just the amount of wonderment he had, like, when it was really funny. I thought it was great when he was supposed to call Pierre's ex-best friend who he stole his current wife from, and he's like, oh, maybe she went over there. And he calls, and the guy realized what was going on almost immediately, and he comes over because he felt so bad. But Pierre Francois Pinot got really got really excited about selling the movie, like buying the movie rights to that book that he got completely engrossed in that character. And he's like, we got the rights, and it was for a steal kind of thing, not realizing. He's like, did you even mention my wife? He's like, shit.
And well, then he had this, I mean, I think part of it too is he's not used to lying to people.
No,
like,
he's not
a schemer at all. Yeah,
right.
And then I felt really bad. I thought, so I had seen both of these movies before. I think we rented this from, like, the San Francisco Public Library, the one in Pacifica, I think, is where we saw the French version originally.
Mm-hmm.
I remembered the movie, but not everything. And I thought at the end, Francois gets, like, his, like, revenge a little bit, because he has that scene where he calls the wife and he says he's in a payphone because she's in the hospital, and he says, you know, that Pierre's been working all night to try to get her, and he's called two of her exes to try to find out where she is, and he really does love her. And then I thought, once she agreed to talk, that she was just going to be like, he was going to be like, oh, and that girl really is his mistress. He's been seeing her for years. He said he's going to leave you for him and get his revenge. And that ended up not happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that just shows, like, I guess I'm more of a petty person than he is. Like, he was just a good person from beginning to end. And he just, like you said, he just gets too excited. Like, when she called back to talk to Pierre, he picked up the phone, and then she basically ruining his own plot. Like, he came up with his own plot to get them back together, and then he foiled his own plot.
Right. Well, and Pierre, everything that happened to him is completely his own fault. So,
and he deserves
as much
it.
As it pains you to watch Francois having trouble and struggling, it's always like really satisfying to watch Pierre just in agony over the situation that he's created.
Right. And so, I think that was consistent in both movies.
Yeah. Well, like that.
Well, at least, well, like
a
lot
you of kind of feel bad for the guy in the other movie because he's not a total asshole, whereas Pierre in this movie is just like a raging dick.
I didn't really feel bad for him. I felt he was dabbling in assholery and got what he deserved for it.
No, like,
he
like,
knew
you don't
better.
Feel bad
he
for
knew
him.
Better.
It's satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's switch over to the Pierre guy. Like, he was just an asshole. So, I mean,
through and
what was weird was watching this movie. Is we actually watched Dinner for Schmucks first. So in my notes, I kept comparing it to Dinner for Schmucks, even though this is the original. So I was like, in my notes, it'd be like, oh, he did this too. In reality, it should have been the other way. But he is just an asshole from the beginning. He actually had that girl that they call on accident towards the middle of the movie. It actually was his, he tries to make it like she's a nympho. She's a sex maniac. She's my ex. Then, you know, she's crazy. Don't listen to her. But it turns out, like, that was his mistress. Like, he really was cheating on his wife.
Yeah.
I love that he has his mistress in his phone book so accessible.
Yeah, well, you know, this is before, I guess, what? You had them all in your cell phone, right? You had to write it down somewhere.
People actually
in the house
had a
where your wife lives.
And not only, so he's an asshole. He also, like, Dustin, you pointed out briefly, you know, a few minutes ago that he's actually, like, totally into this, and this is, like, a weekly dinner versus a monthly dinner.
Yeah.
You know, the
but
other
he's
thing,
really into it.
Yeah.
And he's, like, calling around, trying to find it. And, in fact, he even jokes around, like, his friends mentions that his dad does something, like, he collects, I don't remember what he said his dad collects.
Ladles.
And he's, like, ladles. And he's, like, oh, is your dad available? And, like, he quickly is, like, I'm just kidding. But, like, he kind of looked like he really wasn't kidding. Like, he's desperately wants the approval of these other people at the dinner.
Yeah.
That he was willing to, like, take his own friend's father just to not look like a chump.
Well, yeah, and also, if you take it to the next level, like, these guys are all trying to ridicule these people for being obsessed with their hobbies, yet their hobby, they meet weekly to compare their collection of idiots.
Right.
So they have a fucked up, stupid hobby, too. It's just way more cruel.
Yeah. And then, let's see what else he does. In this one, he's also... In both movies, they bring the auditor into the person's life. And in this one, he actually is, like, doing tax evasion. Like, he has all this, like, art that he hasn't declared.
He's a big tax dodger.
Like, he's doing
illegal
shit,
not even just a little bit.
Too.
Like, his entire apartment is packed with
art. Yeah, he's doing,
like,
straight-up crime.
Yeah, at one point, they go through and they take all the stuff away. And his whole house is empty. Like, they throw I don't know how they did it so quickly, but... They take everything and shove it into one room. Like, oh my God. It's insane. What else? Like, he's just mean to everybody. Like, he yells at everybody.
Yeah.
But what was really great was, like, his friend who, the first person they called, the guy who's the author, comes in and he's just making fun of Pierre. Like, he's trying to help out. Like, he helps move the stuff, but he's just laughing every time that Francois fucks something up and he's.
Well, it is funny. It's really funny every time.
Well, and you also
up.
Like get the sense of how big of a douche Pierre is by how quickly his wife is willing to walk out on him.
Yeah,
so
she
it's,
was
like,
waiting
clearly
for a
there's
reason.
Been stuff building,
oh, you
and
know
then
what
the
else
dinner's the
up?
Final straw.
Yeah, so the dinner's the final straw. What's really fucked up is so the wife before she leaves, she's nice enough to call the doctor,
right,
to come and take a look at the guy's back, and then like the doctor like mentions something to Pierre, and he's like, I called you to fix my back, not my wife, or something, or not my marriage. And then the doctor, because the wife mentioned what was going on the way out, the doctor knows that he has the dinner with the idiots, and so the doctor goes, we did the same thing with ugly girls, and the guy says, yeah, we did too, but that's more objective, or something like that. Like, he's basically, like, shits on the doctor, saying that, like, the doctor's kind of having, like, a sense of camaraderie with him in that moment. And he's kind of like, yeah, but that's for idiots. Like, my thing is way better than what you do.
Right.
And, oh, man, it was so mean.
He's
so
just
mean.
Such a dick.
Yeah, whatever. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck him. I'm just trying to Moving see if there's on. Anything that else that I have on him.
Oh, you know what I really love, though? Like, how different the character, the former best friend, was from the character in the American movie.
Well, the former, there isn't a former, that character's absent in the American movie.
I thought that character was kind of supposed to be Jermaine Clement's character.
No, yeah. Jermaine Clement, no. So in this movie, the Jermaine Clement character doesn't have it. So remember, there's a second person that they try calling that they couldn't get a hold. So Just was the friend, or Joust, or whatever his name was.
Just.
But there was a second person that they called. Remember, because Just was there helping them try to find the address to the place.
Just.
So anyway, the friend was there when the tax guy was there, because they were trying to find the address.
No, but I mean, it like replaces house. That vehicle
to an extent. It serves the in this same one, purpose. There's two characters. Yeah,
because it's a phone call. I mean, basically, like when he answers the phone, it sounds exactly the same too.
Yeah, they basically combine two characters, or they split his character into two characters. Wait. Reverse that. No, and so in the other
one. It's
a
fusion.
His character in the American version, they took the two characters and combined them into one Jermaine Clement character.
They fused them into a greater character.
Into a hybrid character.
A super character.
Anyway. <All right. laughs> So he has this best friend. I mean, in the French version, he has a former best friend who was dating his wife, and he stole the wife from the friend. And this dude is like totally on board to just come over and help him out when he hears that this woman has left him. Like, he kind of gloats for a second, but then he just shows up and he's like along for the ride, which is totally bizarre.
Well, he's also watching him suffer, so that's cool.
No, but I mean, like, he went there specifically to make sure he's okay, and then he just kind of like enjoyed the moments.
Yeah, he did. See, he said something along those like you just sounded so pathetic. I had to put it behind me, or something like that.
Well, I mean, also, like, you know, would you leave? Like, it's pretty funny what's going on.
It is pretty funny.
I would hang. Yeah. Let's see what happens here.
Pierre, so this whole thing goes around, and you just see Pierre's life collapsing.
Yeah.
So
he's just watching that guy's life fall apart. It's hilarious.
Loses his wife, loses his mistress, because, Francois eventually, when the mistress calls back and he's like, don't even bother with this fucker, like he's an asshole. So he loses his wife, his mistress, he's going to get tax evaded, and or he's going to get audited. Because
straight up evaded,
he's already doing the tax evasion. He's already doing that. He's going to get audited because by getting this guy into his house, not like he was going to originally like not care, like he kind of was like poking fun. Like, the auditor was poking fun, like, oh, you know, you must be rich, but he wasn't really doing anything. But because they called that whatever the second guy was, we never saw him, they found out that he was banging the auditor's wife.
Yeah.
And that's what put this final straw over. It's
that
like,
was such a great moment, though.
Oh, it was. Like, I don't remember what this guy was. I think he was another author.
I think so,
or a painter. Oh, man. Publishing is a cutthroat business. It must be, if you have to.
Apparently.
There must be a lot of money in publishing if you're able to have that much art and stuff like that.
Maybe.
But I guess this was 1999. Maybe
there
so before
be.
The Kindles.
Right. Before it collapsed.
So I guess we should just kind of talk about the humor and the different tones of the movie. Like, this movie's pretty serious. Like, it's a European film. Like, it's got a lot of tongue in cheek, but it's witty and it's funny. I don't know what else to say about it. Like,
I don't think
clever.
It's serious. Yeah, it's clever. It's smart
quick.
Humor.
It's like a play. I mean, it was a play, and it seems like it feels like you're watching a play. Like, it's very quick.
Exactly.
I think the gags are really sharp and quick. Like, I like that one where, like, when he's on the phone and, like, the woman's last name is Susser, but which also sounds like his sister, you know.
Oh, that's
like,
right. Yeah, yeah.
There's
yeah,
like
yeah.
little gags
good.
Like that I thought were smart and cool. I
thought
well,
it
was
I love that like 90% of it takes place in Pierre's living room.
Yeah,
which of course is because it was
a play.
But no, there's a lot of good quick humor, a lot of like who's on first kind of humor, where there's like a lot of clever wordplay.
Right, but it also does something to the pacing when you have something set entirely in one room, like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and what was that really amazing film with Christoph Waltz and Kate Winslet? Carnage.
Yeah, Carnage.
Carnage was freaking amazing, and it's because it takes place in this one room. And so when you're stuck in this room, it tends to get a little more claustrophobic as you go, and the pressure builds, and it just does something to your brain.
You know what else was another really good movie that took place mostly in one room?
The Room.
The Room. Oh, man, that's a garbage movie.
Tearing me apart.
You're tearing me apart, Lisa. Have you ever seen that movie,
yes.
Dustin? Just on a tangent?
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's great. All right. So
I wonder if we can get him to appear on the podcast.
He's in LA a lot. They still have midnight viewings of that movie. And he apparently comes out and he like throws a football around with people in a circle like they did in the movie.
All right. Goals.
So maybe we should go find him someday.
Hashtag goals.
I think we'll talk more about the humor when we go and talk about how bad the American remake is. I think it's kind of hard to talk about the humor without talking about the second one.
Yeah.
So I think we should do that now. Unless you guys have anything else to say about this movie, I think we should just wrap it up and move on to a word from our sponsor. Do you guys have anything?
No, I mean, like, I freaking love this movie. I mean, obviously, I introduced it to you by renting it from the library, and it's not often that you rent a foreign film from the library and it's a good experience.
No, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. Like, the whole time watching it, I was like, this is really good, and I was laughing throughout the movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I really liked at least Francois Pignon.
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 Ah, damn it.
Pignon.
Pignon.
You got any last words for this movie, Dustin?
Pignon.
All right, guys, you know what time it is, right?
What time is it?
It's time to talk about Audible.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so just like last time, this episode is presented to you by Audible. They have over 180,000 audiobooks available to listen to and just enjoy. We are actually offering you guys one free month and one free audiobook. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/mdxpods. I actually checked out It by Stephen King. It's a 44-hour book, and I'm about 13 hours into it, and I'm actually enjoying it quite a bit. I don't think this is a book that I could have read because it's kind of slow, but listening to it makes it a lot more bearable, and I'm actually enjoying it quite a lot. So thank you, Audible.
You can't read.
Well, we're doing a podcast about movies for a reason.
Yep. So thank you, Audible. Check it out. On with the show. All right. So now that we're done talking about the good movie, let's talk about the not so good movie.
Ugh.
So like I said at the beginning of this, Dinner for Schmucks, I thought looked terrible, but then I ended up liking it, and then I ended up hating it. And I definitely hated it this time. The plot's basically the same as the original one. Like, all the same stuff happens. But the difference is on this one, it's Barry and I think, is it Tim?
Barry and Tim.
Yeah, so Tim, played by Paul, the delightful Paul Rudd. And Barry is the idiot, played by Steve Carell, who's also most of the time very likable and lovable. All the same stuff happens.
Paul Rudd's kind of a dick in real life, though.
I've heard he's really nice.
Mm. Maybe just not if you're styling his hair.
Well, you know what? He is an immortal. He doesn't have time for
or a vampire.
Okay?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't age.
Yeah,
I'd buy vampire for sure.
Probably vampire. Him and Keanu Reeves must go way back.
I don't know. I think they're probably from different vampire clans because yeah, I've never heard anything
different
bad
covens.
About Keanu.
Right.
I think he's one of the good vampires.
Is he shiny?
No, of course not. Don't be ridiculous, Michael.
Sparkly. God.
Okay, so in this one, pretty much all the same stuff happens. The difference is Barry comes over like 2 days early thinking the dinner was on Wednesday, but it was actually on Friday or Saturday, so it was like several days early. And then at the end of it, they do end up going to the dinner. In the original one, they never actually make it to the dinner. So that was like the big difference in this one. And
yeah, I mean, the other thing that's a lot different in this one versus the original is the original, it seems like this is like a hobby for the businessmen, and like they, like, you know, bring the idiot and it's like for their amusement, whereas in the remake it seems like that's how you get promoted. Like, yeah. It's not by doing a good job at the company, it's about winning at this idiot game.
Like, they were impressed with Tim, played by Paul Rudd's, like, idea of courting this German billionaire. But it was really ultimately like, you need to like fucking show us what you got at this dinner if you want.
You really
got
to show us
office.
What you got when it comes to finding jackasses and bringing them to dinner, rather than you really got to show us what you got by generating money for the company that you work for.
That was a fucked ugly lamp too.
Well, the whole point was the lamp was to draw this billionaire in because the billionaire, he knew the billionaire would like it. And by getting him to buy these, he even says, like, we're going to lose money on this. But this got us a meeting with this guy, and he wants to invest like $100 million.
Yes, yes, that is all true. But stuff. The lamp was hideous.
I understood the concept, Michael, but thank you.
But no, you didn't. You were too concerned with the looks.
No, I'm on team ugly lamp. The lamp was gross.
So I guess like the difference in this one is the idiots were, some of them were like had the eccentric hobbies and everything like they did in the original one. But in this one, like, there were some weird, just plain stupid people. Like, Chris O'Dowd played a Spanish blind fencer.
Ugh, that was such a missed opportunity because he has that delightful accent.
I actually thought he did a pretty good Spanish accent. I thought it was pretty funny.
Terrible.
I
mean,
didn't one of the guys just...
Spanish accent.
Didn't one of the guys just have a vulture? Like, that was the whole deal. Oh, he has a vulture. And,
like, he chewed it up and chewed the food up and the vulture ate out of his mouth. Oh, there was I can't remember the guy's name,
but like vultures are cool. I don't know.
I mean, it's weird. I guess what made him weird,
I don't think I would pick that guy. Like, if I had to pick an idiot for the idiot dinner, I don't think I'd pick vulture guy. He'd get
and
a
then
pass.
You had a what was her name? I always forget her name, but she's in a lot of stuff. The one who, like, speaks to dead animals.
Oh, Octavia Spencer. I can't stand Octavia her
Spencer.
I can't help it. She just looks like a toad.
She was weird and awkward in this movie. Like, she was just weird and, like...
And she's, like, a really good actress.
She's amazing actress.
Don't like her
face,
though.
She was really weird in this. Then you had... I can't remember the ventriloquist guy who was really popular late 90s, early 2000s. He was in this.
Dunham,
and he was
dude?
Just weird. Yeah, Jeff Dunham. That's what it is. Good job, honey.
Woo! I saw him live once.
And then, did you? Cool.
Yeah, kind of.
I didn't know that. But then you've got Barry, played by Steve Carell, who I normally like. Steve Carell, I love him in Date Night. I like him in Crazy Stupid Love. I love him in The Office. I even liked him in Get Smart. In this, while he's likable, he really is an idiot in this movie. Like, he's stupid, certifiably insane. He is a genius at taxidermy.
Right.
But this guy is crazy.
He could not function in society. Like, I don't buy that he would have a job, or like that he could really get himself to work, that he ever would have been married. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, like, I meet some people sometimes that you wonder, like, who is paying your taxes for you? How are you alive?
Well, then but the thing is, he also believed in, like, everybody. He honestly thought that everybody at these dinners were amazing, which that's great that he had that like childlike wonder, but he was very much like a child. And he believed that Zach Galifianakis' character could control his mind and did whatever he told him to just because he said that he was telling him to do it with his mind. So, yeah, this character doesn't seem like a real person. He didn't seem to function as it, like, I don't know, like you said, I don't know how he could have.
He's
got to work,
believable.
Let alone tied his shoes. Yeah, it was just too crazy.
Well, and he's too annoying for you to feel sorry for him.
Exactly. And then the thing is, he had... You mentioned it earlier in the original one, like, the other guy had something to lose and something to gain, which I never even thought about. But in this one, like...
He's just got nothing else going on.
He's got nothing going on. And in fact, like, the only part where he gets kind of sad is, like, he still wants to go to the dinner because he's like, well, at least I could be the biggest idiot. Kind of thing,
right?
And
yeah.
It's really sad. Like, he knew what the dinner was before he showed up to the dinner, and he still did it. Like, he has zero self esteem. Like, he has.
But I think he kind of scoped out the crowd and got the sense that they might appreciate his thing. And then they have that whole triumphant moment where he, you know, he stacks up his little taxidermy window box things, and that was pretty cool. I mean, like, I love the taxidermy.
Oh yeah, the taxidermy.
Yeah, the taxidermy
is the best part of the movie.
Really cool.
The best part of this movie is the intro,
the opening credits, and then the end. And what's funny is, like,
I actually
part was
Google
really
that
funny.
Shit sometimes just to look at the taxidermy mice.
I would rather watch a movie about how they made those things than watch this movie.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a few documentaries. You don't want to see my search history.
I don't. I really don't.
Don't look at it.
But let's switch over to Tim, played by Paul Rudd. Now, Paul Rudd, even in this role, even though he's doing it because he wants to get married and he wants more money and he thinks that's what his girlfriend wants.
Even though she explicitly tells him that that is not what she wants.
Yeah.
He's spineless.
He's fine. No, that's exactly what he is. And he's still likable throughout this entire movie, even though
he has kind of asshole shoulders.
but there's like a one point in the movie where he's like, where like his only real asshole part of the movie is when his girlfriend's about to leave and he goes, no, there is that other me who pays for this apartment and pays for us to go out to dinner and pays for us to do this. And like that guy has to do this if you want to keep up this lifestyle. Like that's really the only moment he has where you're kind of like, oh,
he's
Paul,
just like every
come on,
rich
Paul.
Asshole in San Francisco in that moment.
Yeah. But overall, for the most part, he is just overwhelmed by Barry's ineptitude, just being terrible at life. Like in this one, like he doesn't have a mistress. He has an ex-girlfriend, not even an ex-girlfriend, somebody he like got drunk and had sex with once, who is stalking him, and like he's moved multiple times, and Barry gets her back into his life. And that part of this movie plays out a lot more. Like she comes into the movie like multiple times.
Yeah. And she destroys his apartment. But what bothered me the most about that whole dynamic is everything that happened with her was so preventable.
Yeah, I guess.
Like everything as it was happening, it would have been so easy to shut down each of those things.
Yeah, it's true. Because like, first of all, why did he have her on the Skype or instant messaging thing? That was weird that he even still had that going with it. That scene was really weird because Steve Carell's character Barry gets on his instant messenger, messages this random girl, tells her to come over. She sends a picture of her butt. He prints it out, and that prints out in like record speed. I've never seen a printer shoot out a full color glossy photo that quickly.
Of an ass? And I have.
I mean, you must have a really good printer, but they go
just for
butts. He's like,
just for butts.
But he goes in and he like acts like a penguin as she's like throwing stuff at him, and then he plays dead, and that comes in multiple times. Like he plays possum like 3 or 4 times in this movie, pretends to be dead. It's just an awkward scene, but there's not really much else to say about Paul Reed. Like eventually he does kind of befriend Barry, and he tells him what's going on, and he tells him not to come to the dinner, and he comes to the dinner anyway. And he defends him. He's like, you guys are the idiots. Like, this guy is great. And he's like really into what he does. And he ends up being a good guy at the end. And then it just breaks down. But God, it was weird.
Well, and just the humor was just crappy. It was
it
was
wasn't
slapstick,
funny.
But it wasn't good slapstick.
And it was weirdly paced and scenes went on. Like, this was an issue that a lot of movies had in the mid to late 2000s,
mm-hmm.
when they would have so many actors and they would all do their riffs and everything like that.
They had too many scenes, like comedy stars,
and they just parts went on too long.
The whole movie was way too long. Way too long.
Like Jemaine Clement, I really like Jemaine Clement. I think he's great. I love Flight of the Conchords. I've liked him even in Men in Black. I liked him in what's that movie with the director who's doing Thor?
Eagle versus Shark.
What?
Evil versus Shark.
Eagle versus Shark.
I haven't seen that one. I was talking about the vampire movie.
Oh, yeah. Eagle versus Shark's another one.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that was another, but yeah, the vampire movie, What We Do in the Dark or something like that. Or
What We Do in the Shadows.
Great movie. Like, in this one, even hit, like, it went a little, his stuff was a little too far out there.
They were like sketch comedy characters trying to carry a feature.
Yeah. Like, he had some pretty funny dynamic, but, like, the part where they're in his apartment went on too long. I like the art piece when he goes,
yeah.
He sees it's like a snake. He goes, what does that make you think? It makes me think about your penis. And he's like, you get it then. Like, that was pretty funny. And then, like, at the end when he partnered up with Steve Carell and they had, like, their double art exhibit, that was pretty interesting.
I mean, I definitely liked his character's moments. I think he brought a lot to the film.
He didn't save it.
He didn't
save it.
No, but he had definitely the more enjoyable parts were because of him.
Yeah. Other than that, I don't really know what else can be said about this movie.
Like, I remember liking this movie the first time I saw it, and it's not that we watched the original and then watched this and it, you know, disappointed me.
What it probably was
first, and
I think what it probably was that we just had zero expectations for it the first time we watched this movie. Like, because it looked terrible. The only reason we got it was so we can get a discount on a bunch of other movies that we wanted. And I think we just underestimated the movie. We ended up enjoying it. And so this time around, we're like, we remembered kind of liking it.
Right.
And then it wasn't. Like, I still found Paul Rudd to be likable. I still found Steve Carell in moments to be likable. Like, when he was doing the taxidermy part, I thought that was great. I was like, okay, this is the Steve Carell. Like, even though, like, you know, his facts were wrong. Like, he had the Benjamin Franklin mouse, and he's like, it's because he had an electric kite.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
His facts were wrong, but they were funny, and I think that's what Steve Carell does really well.
Yeah, it just...
But he just went too far slapsticky.
Yeah, it just couldn't save the movie.
Paul it's Rudd like in Tropic Thunder. Like, this movie, who's basically just playing his character from I Love You, Man, but with lower stakes.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, in this, it was almost like Steve Carell did what they say not to do in Tropic Thunder. Like, you don't go full retard.
No.
I felt like he kind of did, and that's like his just character wasn't fun. Like, I was uncomfortable most of the time that Steve Carell was doing the weird Barry stuff. Like the part, like the specifically the scene with the. Stalker girl, where they're like spanking each other and
yeah.
throwing stuff.
Yeah, around. That was insane. It was hard to watch.
And there were some things that I really liked. Like, I still found the scene or the moments when they show the picture of Nelson Mandela when he's like, he knows Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, like stuff like that was funny. I like that where he's like, you may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not. That was like the funniest part of the whole movie.
Oh, when he only does part of the Beatles part?
Yeah. That was funny, I guess.
Like, there were a few moments. Basically, my take on this is that it was a feature that should have been a short.
It definitely should have been shorter by like an hour.
Yeah.
I did like the part with Chris O'Dowd when he's like, he slices off the guy's finger. Like, I didn't expect that, and I had seen this before. Like, I thought it was kind of fun. And then he like turns off, he goes to turn off the lights, and he's like, in the dark, in the light, like, we are the same, but in the dark, I am the master, and he like puts the switch and nothing happens. Like, there was some legitimately funny jokes in this, and Paul Rudd had some good one-liners. I don't think any of them are like super memorable.
The good moments were sandwiched in between moments of shit. It was a shit sandwich. Just didn't work.
It was like a series of like shit finger sandwiches, because there were so many small ones.
Shit lady fingers.
Shit lady fingers.
Shit macarons. Not macaroon, macaron.
All right.
I'll have the raspberry and the shit. Pistachio too.
Okay. Do you guys have anything else to say about this
movie? So dismissive. Okay. All right. Shut up.
I think we're done.
That's enough out of everyone.
Oh, man. So, I mean, do you guys have anything else to say about this movie?
It had no pignon.
Pignon.
No pignon.
Which is like the spirit of what this movie should have had. That's what was missing, man. Like, there was nothing lovable. I don't know. I didn't like it. It was bad.
I don't know why they called it Dinner for Schmucks. Like, Katrina and I were talking about this just before we started recording. Like, why didn't they just call it Dinner for Idiots? Or The Dinner Game? Like,
I think they should have called it The Dinner Game. That was another fucking failure. Dinner for Schmucks? Who the fuck named this shit?
I don't know.
Well, and the thing is, they never say schmuck. Like, the entire time, like, we collect idiots and everything. Right. Why not call it Idiots? Like, where did schmucks come in?
Dinner for Idiots would have been so much better, and leaving it as The Dinner Game would have been good, too. Fucking shit sandwich.
And the thing is, even like the bad guys, I can't remember that guy's name. That the actor who was like the boss guy, he's pretty good and stuff. I like him. The one guy from The Daily Show is normally pretty good. And I don't remember the guy from Office Space? The guy who was kind of the rival?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're all normally great. Zach Galifianakis was Zach Galifianakis in this movie.
I always hate him.
I couldn't stand his character in this. Although the showdown between him and Barry when he had brain control he has mind control and Barry had brain control. That was pretty good, I guess.
That was like, ridiculous.
It was ridiculous, but I'm glad that Zach Galifianakis had his comeuppance, I guess.
I just hate Zach Galifianakis. He's like a giant baby that masturbates. I just hate him.
He's got the best name. It starts with a gal and ends with a kiss.
Ugh.
All right. Shall we transition into the movie news and the letters from fans?
Yeah.
We have letters from fans?
Yeah, we got a letter.
Ooh.
So the letter from fan.
Well, I got a letter.
This is not the letters from fans segment. This is the letter from fan segment.
We get comments and stuff about our posts, and we get emails and tweets, but this one was a full-on letter.
Oh, so I want
to read it out. There's no poetry. It says, Dear Mike, thank you for getting back with me. I will promise to listen to your podcast this coming week. If you're interested in talking to an older person like me about the old days of movies, give me a call. If you're interested in learning about older stuff, he also says I'll be happy to be a part of your show in the future. His name is Chris Club. He's actually a client of mine at my store. We talk about movies all the time, and I kind of mentioned this to him, and he actually went through and listened to all of them. So, you know, I just want to, you know, give a shout out to Chris. You know, thank you for listening to the podcast, and we really appreciate it. At this time, we're not really looking for anybody else to join the show, but, you know, we really appreciate you listening, and I really do appreciate you getting back to us and, you know, sending us some love. So thank you, Chris.
Shout out to Chris.
Thanks.
Whoop, whoop.
And other than that, let's just get into the news segment. We don't have a lot. I've got two stories. One's going to be really quick, and the other one I think we'll have, you know, a little discussion about. So the first one came out today, actually. They are going to be rebooting the Resident Evil series already.
What? Aren't they still making Resident Evil movies?
Well, no. So this year they came out with Resident Evil: The Final Chapter. And they said this was going to be the last one, although it did kind of end on a way where they're like, it could come back, but I think they just decided 6 or 7 of these movies is enough. I'm kind of on board with it because the first one's not bad. Actually, the first 3 aren't bad, and then they get really, really bad. Ugh. I've seen them all for some reason. I don't know why I put myself through it. but I do hope that if they actually do go through with this reboot, that they actually keep it in line with the games, because the games actually have some, they're weird stories, but they're engaging and interesting. Like, the whole franchise was based off a character that's not in the games, so it was kind of every once in a while a character from the games would pop up, but they were not a big deal. Like, people who would lead an entire game or even 2 or 3 games who would be in a movie for like 2 minutes and have one liner and then go. So I hope that they follow the games, I guess, a little bit more closely. But other than that, like, it's a no-brainer. Of course they were gonna reboot that series.
Sure.
And then the second story, actually another story that I just remembered, they did cast Venom. They are rebooting that character. They're saying that it's going to be standalone, but then they're also saying that, why can't I think of his name right now? The guy who plays Spider-Man and Peter Parker right now.
Tom Holland?
Tom Holland, thank you. They are going to interact, so this movie is either going to be a complete standalone or it might just, Spider-Man might appear in it very briefly, but Tom Hardy is going to play Eddie Brock in Venom.
That's cool.
Which, I think that's cool. I like Tom Hardy. I know, Katrina, you don't like Tom Hardy for some reason.
I don't dislike him. I just think he's a little bit overrated. But I feel like this whole movie is going to be just a cash grab because they're attaching him to it. And they're not going to, you know, dedicate enough effort to it. They're spread thin right now. There's no way it's going to be good.
I don't think it's going to be good because Sony is very obviously trying to still build their extended universe without Marvel. Because originally,
just doing licensing grabs.
Yeah, when Andrew Garfield was still Spider-Man, they were going to have a Sinister Six movie without Spider-Man. They were going to do a Venom movie without him being introduced in Spider-Man first, and he was going to fight Carnage. They were also going to have a Young Aunt May film, a Black Cat film, a Silver Sable film, which they are still doing the Black Cat and Silver Sable film. So it's really weird that they don't want to just stay with the Marvel universe. Like, there's even talks of them pulling Spider-Man away from Marvel after the two Spider-Man movies and Infinity Wars are done.
Are they going to do fucking standalone with a female character yet?
God, yeah, no.
No, they are. So Marvel is working on Captain Marvel with Brie Larson. I think that comes out in 2018 or 2019. So they are working on a Brie Larson one. Of course, Wonder Woman comes out in a couple weeks. Or actually, I think that's this Friday. And then they've got, on the Sony side, they are doing Black Cat and Silver Sable, which are both female characters. And then this summer, I think in just a couple weeks, they've got Atomic Blonde with Charlize Theron, which looks amazing. Like, I can't wait to see that one.
Name of that character problematic.
Atomic Blonde?
Yeah.
Oh, you should watch the trailer, though. It looks amazing.
Okay.
And then the final story that I've got for news is one that I'm kind of excited for, but kind of bummed about at the same time, is Hellboy is getting rebooted.
Oh.
And it's going to be a hard R-rated reboot. It is going to have David Harbour from Stranger Things, who played the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think he's good. I think he's got the kind of the dry wit, sarcastic tone, and kind of I think he could do it. I think he would be as good as Ron Perlman as the character. Like, I think it's brilliant casting. What bums me out about it is just like a month and a half, 2 months ago, Guillermo del Toro and Ron Perlman were both like, we're going to go and try to get this the third movie made. Like, we're going to really go for it. It's going to be our last push, but we're going to go. They got like 100,000 people to sign a petition, and the studio still said no. This was less than 2 months ago. And then right after, the studio announces, yeah, well, no, we are going to reboot it, and we're going to have it. And I think like the creative team they got behind it is good. I'm just bummed that we're not going to get to finish the Guillermo del Toro trilogy.
Right.
And that kind of bums me out.
Anything that he does is amazing.
Yeah, like those first two movies were really great. The second movie was like a critical success, but not a financial success. Like, it made money, but by the time you factor in like the budget and the advertising, it like broke even, so they didn't want to risk a third one.
Huh.
So like they're saying that they're going to have a reduced budget. Like, I think they're going to go try to do like the Dread route where they do like a $40 million movie, and you know, I'm sure they're going to, instead of fighting like these big demon things, it's probably going to be like vampires or mummies or zombies or something that's going to be low budget.
I wish for they would just like come in under budget by not casting fucking A-listers and just like cast some really freaking awesome unknowns.
Well, I think David Harbour is kind of that. Like, he's only really done Stranger Things. He's done more than that, but that's the thing that people know him from.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure he's pretty cheap. And Marvel used to do that, too. That's how Marvel got away with cheaper movies a long time ago. Like, Chris Evans only made, like, $200,000 for the first Captain America movie.
Only.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now, yeah. I mean, when you think of nowadays, comparatively, like, people get millions of dollars for those movies.
It's insane.
It's pretty crazy. And then I think the last little, unless you guys have, do you have anything to say about that, Dustin?
No.
No? And then we've briefly talked about Scarface. We spent an entire episode talking about Scarface, but they are remaking that with Diego Luna with a script by the Coen brothers, which you would think those two things, really great. Diego Luna's great.
I mean, I fucking love Diego Luna.
And Coen brothers.
I would climb him like a tree, but he's kind of short.
Well, that's fine. I don't
care. Like, the physicality is an odd choice.
I mean, he played kind of a tough, badass guy in the Rogue One.
But he's, like, adorable. He's got that, I mean, maybe it's because I saw him with
enough.
A bowl cut originally. No, he's, like, adorable. He's got those big eyes and the fluffy hair, and he's just not really, like, a badass type.
So he's playing whatever the Tony Montana version is going to be, with the script by the Coen brothers, who are great.
Yeah.
Fargo.
Yeah, yeah.
Burn After Reading. Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, brother, we're out there. All these great movies, and they got the director David Ayer from Suicide Squad
who's
going to direct this movie. Yeah.
So what you're saying is we need to kill him.
Oh my.
Well, and the thing is,
God, I
hate
Suicide Squad. I don't know why I watched it.
No, I think a big part of why it was so bad was there was a lot of studio interference. Like, they made the movie and then
always.
They did like 2 months worth of reshoots because Batman vs Superman was like just panned. So they went through and changed it and added like, you know, Queen and all the popping.
Do you
music
think they had to like try to make it worse than Batman vs Superman to try to prop up Batman vs Superman?
No, I think they just tried to make it Guardians of the Galaxy and they just didn't do it.
Oh, it was
correctly.
Awful.
So yeah, that's pretty much it that I have for the news. I don't think Scarface needs another remake. I think the 80s one is going to stand the test of time, and especially if David Ayer is going to do it. Now, maybe he'll surprise me. I mean, you know, maybe he'll have less studio involvement in this movie, but it's weird that they don't just let the Coen brothers do it.
Like, yeah, that's done very crime. Weird.
They've did, I mean, No Country for Old Men was a
maybe they don't want to do
crime
it.
Crime movie.
Right.
That's true, maybe. I mean, they could do whatever they want to do. It's weird that they would just do a script, though.
I don't know. I don't know them.
No.
Weird. I don't know them either. Joel, Ethan, if you want to get to know us, we'll talk to you, man. Both of you guys.
Yeah, you know, give us
go
a
out
call.
For coffee.
We'll go out for coffee. It'll be great. We're great people. But other than that, I don't have anything else. Do you guys have anything else you'd like to talk about before we call it a day?
No.
Shit sandwich.
Bino. All right, Katrina.
Pignon.
Pignon. Pignon. Did I do it right that time?
Do it again.
Pretty close.
Pignon.
Yeah, that was the best one.
Yeah.
And it only took an hour to get you
finish
there.
Finish strong. All right, Katrina. You're a very talented YouTuber. You make a lot of really cool crafts and stuff like that. Home decor, makeup tutorial. You do a little bit of dabbling of a little bit of everything.
Some creepy story
Where can
time.
Our listeners find you? including story times about weird surgeries and stuff.
I am all over the internet at Katrinaocity.
Specifically on YouTube. Check her out on YouTube.
Yeah, check out my YouTube.
She's on Instagram. Subscribe. She's on Twitter.
Like some videos.
She's on all the stuff. So we are on at mdxpods.com. We are on Instagram and Twitter at mdxpods. You can also check us out on Facebook. We do technically have a YouTube, but I don't really do much with it, so don't worry about checking that out. So I don't know why I'm mentioning it. Of course, check out our sponsor Audible, audibletrial.com/mdxpods. We are also Amazon affiliates, so we have a link in the description for this episode. You're going to shop with Amazon anyway, so you might as well, you know, give us a kickback, go through our link, and you just log in like you normally do, and we get a little bit of it. We've already got $1.84 from people using it, so thank you guys. The Audible trial has been going really well. We've had like 3 or 4 people do it already, so thank you guys for supporting Audible, and thank you for supporting the show. And of course, Patreon. Dustin, what do you have to say about Patreon?
Oh, Patreon's great. Please join the ranks of our Patreon patrons. You could be alongside
Give
such
us
greats
your money.
As Alex. And yeah, that's a short list. It's a short list. You can get in on it early, guys. So
ground floor.
I mean, if you're half as smart as Alex, you'll donate $1.
And we did change some of the tiers around to give you guys better prizes and stuff like that. We do have special episodes planned if we hit any of our milestones that we're trying to get to. So, you know, help us out, and we're going to do some special episodes and some more gift giveaways. You know, thank you to everyone who shared the episode. Keep doing that. Like us and subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave a review. Share our episodes. If you guys can't give us any money, I understand. Times are tough. We've got Trump in office.
It's hot in the streets. It's a struggle out there.
We're unsure how the world's going to go. But share us on Facebook. Share us on Twitter, Instagram, whatever. Share our episodes, you know. Get us out to your friends. You know, the more people listen, the better.
And you're all going to die anyway, so you might as well give us your money.
Yeah, you can't take it with you, people.
Yeah.
Are you going to get buried with it?
Unless you're, I mean, the Egyptians believe not. If you're Egyptian, keep your money. But if you're not Egyptian, give it to us.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.